So Matt and I are together right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rare occurrence.
Yes, it is.
I think only happened on like 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Uh-huh. And always makes for a good bout of laughter, a good adventure to be had.
Indeed.
But this particular thing that you're listening to right now is exciting because we're not about to talk about a movie that we've seen. We are about to talk about a movie we are going to see.
Yeah, we've never done this before. Some preliminary impressions.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think there's only one time where we've together seen a movie in the theaters and then snobbed about it immediately after. And that was, of course, the fateful Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes, a movie of great significance and one that just continues to stick with us in wonderful ways and always get us from behind. In fact,
the words of Deobia,
mm-hmm.
Check out episode 30 when we interviewed him.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of this entire journey so far.
Absolutely.
Which I think was the last time we were together doing
an
episode.
Yeah, it was.
Interviewing Deobia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is a monumental occurrence.
It is.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, our 50th episode.
Yeah. We've made it.
We made it to 50. That's what they say. If you don't make it 50, you haven't made it.
We've made it to the number of eggs that Cool Hand Luke eats in the movie Cool Hand Luke.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I've never seen that movie.
Oh. I just spoiled the whole movie.
Yeah. Invalidated myself to the person who's not listening.
It's okay. They've never seen Cool Hand Luke because they don't exist.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
But what does exist is the movie that we are about to see, where we're going to share some preliminary impressions about this movie, and then we'll take a little break, maybe play the theme music by Hans Zimmer, wink, mm-hmm. wink, and then, then go into some immediate after-movie impressions and see how they match up. So if you haven't picked up yet, the film is the newest offering from Chris Nolan.
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, also known as Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Dunkirk.
As Sean said earlier, something along the lines of this movie is going to be a slam Dunkirk.
That's not all we have at the moment for Dunkirk puns, but
yeah.
Maybe we'll come up with a few as we watch Tom Hardy probably blow things up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it'll... I'm thinking just the word done. I'm done with that movie. And
or dun-dun-dun is often used as like an ominous... Like,
oh, yeah.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, so they got some ominous...
Dunkirk.
Dun Captain Kirk.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. Talk about two storylines I would love to see merge into one cinematic universe.
Mm.
Kirk.
More than likely, if you are listening to this, you're aware of Chris Nolan.
Of course.
You're aware of the fact that he directed such films as Following and Insomnia.
Clearly, if you're a Chris Nolan fan, you knew that.
You might even know that he helmed Memento.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps even The Prestige.
Yeah. The only movie that I can think of that has Nikola Tesla as a character.
Right. Especially Nikola Tesla portrayed by David Bowie.
Yeah.
Tesla?
Quite a labyrinth.
Quite a labyrinth, yeah. So, this is seemingly a departure for Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He's made a movie about a war. And not just a war within the mind.
No. He has done that. In fact, he broke
He's
the ground.
He's done Kirk that.
Kirk.
He broke ground for the psychological warfare within DiCaprio's own mind.
Never before were there movies about psychological torment until Chris Nolan.
The concept hadn't come around.
Yeah.
You've never heard of Stanley Kubrick.
He did it, though. Chris Nolan did it. But yeah, absolutely. This is a big departure because it's a movie about a war,
a real war that happened. Historical war.
A historical
known
war.
By many as World War II.
Yeah, I would love. Anyway, so Dunkirk, movie about a war that actually happened. And my question is just how is he going to do it? You know what I mean? Because we are used to this, like, Chris Nolan, like, everyone sort of treats Chris Nolan like the new M. Night Shyamalan in my mind. It's like, for M. Night Shyamalan, it was, what's the twist going to be? With Chris Nolan, it's like, where's the psychological mind-bending maze going to be?
Right.
So how do you do that with a war movie? My guess is that you don't. And that the movie will probably seem a little boring, actually.
Yeah, possibly. I made a prediction a couple episodes ago that Dunkirk was going to be Chris Nolan's attempt to pull the heartstrings of the audience. But
yeah,
I think I'm going to revoke that anticipation. I think it's just going to be more a lot of explosions, intense situations, and some really beautiful shots.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, maybe it's his attempt to really prove to the world that he's like a technical master, which certainly he has a way of conveying his vision well, and hundreds of millions of dollars never hurts.
Yeah, right.
So
this is a low budget film for him, just $150 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
That actually is very impressive.
I'm pretty sure Interstellar was $500 million.
I remember The Dark Knight was $400 million with $100 million for advertising.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. And I remember, I think that was like the most expensive movie I'd ever heard of, maybe ever made at the time.
Yeah. At the time until his next movie.
But wow, $150 million. That is a...
I think so, yeah. So he'll probably make a good return on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
But today's the day it has come out, so we really don't know anything about it. We just know that Hans Zimmer has done the music, that Cillian Murphy's in it, and that...
The Scarecrow,
and that it's an actual, like, short Chris Nolan movie. Usually they're like 2:45, 3-hour-ish. This one's like 1:45, so we were very, very grateful for that.
Yeah, that was a big point of excitement when Sean and I were like making our final plans to see this movie, because I was fully ready to devote 3+ hours of my day, like, just to the movie theater experience.
Yeah.
But now it looks like the whole thing, like, maybe even recordings included, will be able to be done in like under 3, which is impressive.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I'm grateful.
Yeah, so I don't know if I could... what's the story? I don't know, but...
Yeah, don't know the story. We're going in pretty blind. So here's my predictions. My predictions is there's going to be successions of tense situations, all of which involve a lot of yelling and very high stakes, where characters are facing their own death, the possibility of their own death. All of these situations will involve lots of explosions, probably lots of helicopter sound effects, and a lot of men yelling. I'm not sure if there are going to be women in this movie. If there are, given Chris Nolan's track record, they're going to be very poorly drawn. And on that note, I think every character will be very poorly drawn, is my prediction, that there's not going to be a single round character. They may make one attempt at a round character for the main actor. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know who that actor is either, but he's the one who seems to be the main character according to the trailer.
Yeah, my guess is all these characters are going to have like one defining trait. Like one guy's going to be the courageous, like bold guy. One guy's going to be like the guy who's got a wife back at home. Uh-huh. And then another guy's maybe going to have like a memento with him, perhaps of his past life that he looks at in tense situations.
Perhaps a totem.
Perhaps a totem. And then it will end in... Maybe lots of death, or at least some pretty big deaths. And yeah, I think that's about the extent of my prediction.
Yeah, I'm really excited, you know, so for Interstellar for me, and I do mean Interstellar this time.
Cooper.
As Sean helped me realize, I have a habit of calling each Chris Nolan movie by like the previous movie he made. I've done that a couple times on our episodes.
Make Dunkirk Interstellar.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're actually talking about Interstellar.
Actually talking about Interstellar when Chris Nolan pulled the fast one on all of us and brought Matt Damon out of nowhere.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm wondering, like, will there be like a final scene or something with like Winston Churchill or some other historical character or just someone in general? And it's like, you know, well, we've heard Michael Caine is not in this movie, but
apparently,
you know, like it'd be nice to have a little Michael Caine, or maybe like maybe Hugh Jackman will come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just
Bale.
Bale, yeah. I think something's going to surprise me toward the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like an actor reveal, an actor's name who hasn't been, like, on the bill.
Hmm.
And
could be McConaughey.
Could be McConaughey.
Coop.
Maybe he'll play, like, all right, the Americans are getting in this war.
I hope if he's in it that his name is Coop in this movie. Get over here, Coop! The eternal recurring form of Coop. That's either here or in the future of Interstellar.
Exactly.
Coop.
Yeah, so I'm really curious. I know almost nothing of the plot except for the basic idea that British soldiers are stranded and they need to get back to England. And so the government like basically asks any civilian with a boat to I almost said drive, to sail across the ocean to France to pick up the British soldiers.
Dunkirk.
That's okay. All I know of the plot.
Yeah.
So where do you weave the story in there? And
how do you get Kenneth Branagh involved?
We band of brothers.
Yeah. Yes, these are the questions I have, and I think something is really going to surprise me that will either make me grimace or laugh.
Yeah.
Those are the only two possible emotional reactions I think I can have to the surprise that I'm fully expecting.
Mm-hmm. So we're about to see this in IMAX, and we know that Chris Nolan loves IMAX, and he loves explosions, so
yeah,
it might be overwhelming.
Yeah, it could be a little crazy, maybe dizzying. So hopefully.
But it will probably look really good.
Yeah, it will.
I expect that of Nolan.
Me too.
And especially this is shot in film, like 70 millimeter.
Ah, okay.
Which I remember Paul Thomas Anderson did for The Master.
Oh, really?
And I remember, watching that in the theaters and just being kind of blown away at how like photographic and vivid it looked. So from the trailer for Dunkirk, it definitely appears to look really good.
Yeah, it does.
Kirk.
So that's about our expectations.
Yeah, I know. And I'm excited. I've been wanting to see this movie for a while and for many reasons, most of which you can probably pick up as a listener.
So we will perhaps send you a little update from the theater, maybe via iPhone. So you might hear a pretty big lapse in the recording quality.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately we will give you our final impressions of Dunkirk after watching it.
So don't press that delete, get out of here button. Yeah. Keep listening.
This has only just begun.
Lord Raiden.
And so Sean and Matt go and experience the ride of Chris Nolan's life. Guided by the spirit of Mel Gibson. That will make sense later. Sean and Matt go and experience many, many heart attacks as they witness this epic thriller, Dunkirk.
You've just seen Dunkirk.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. I can't believe those an hour and 45 minutes. It felt like seven.
Yeah, it really, that was very, it's the only movie that I know of that has actually physically moved me. Like, I'm not saying emotionally, but I feel like that movie like was constantly like basically punching me.
That was the loudest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
By far.
I actually think I might have had a couple heart attacks watching that movie.
There was one moment when I actually thought that about myself.
Oh,
I was like,
really?
I might actually be having a heart attack right now. Like,
wow.
My heart was beating uncomfortably fast.
Yeah. That's amazing, because at one moment I was hoping I was not having a stroke. I was genuinely worried.
Just for like absolute overload.
Yeah, absolute overload. I don't think my ears have ever worked that hard.
Yeah, the first time the sound of bullets came, I was worried that I wasn't actually going to be able to watch this movie.
Wow.
I thought I might have to leave this theater.
I thought that several times as well. I thought right at that moment.
Yeah, I covered my ears.
Yeah. I didn't know how long at all I could, there were several moments where I was like, I think I have to leave. I've never, ever felt that about a movie.
Well, I guess we'll process it for a bit and then record the rest of the episode, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just glad to be able to breathe again.
It's good to know the world still exists.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Finally, able to breathe again and happy to be alive, Sean and Matt consider all the shit they just saw. Keep listening, dear listener, and you too may ponder, what was this movie?
Dunkirk.
Back.
Yeah, we're back.
The last one was a trial.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So now we're actually going to talk about Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, we have the setup.
Yeah.
Oh, and a low battery.
Oh, wow. Well,
see how long we last.
Yeah. Listener out there, in case you don't realize it, we're on Facebook Live also. So we might switch between addressing our listener and our viewer. A new territory for General Snobbery. Who?
This is our 50th episode that we're recording. So we're kind of entering into what we might call new territory.
Yeah.
And that's also because we just saw Dunkirk, which is Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
And that's always some kind of weird new territory. I don't know what this one is.
I don't know what this one is. Just in general and for real, I'm very baffled.
if you're listening to the podcast, you heard what we said right after the movie, where each of us thought at different points that we were having a heart attack.
Yeah. I would not recommend this movie to anyone with any frail physical state.
And if you're taking heart medication,
don't go.
Yeah, that's like...
I'm serious.
Yeah, that's when we're actually getting serious. I'm drinking this coffee now from Dunkin' Donuts, but I mean, it's probably not a wise decision. Like, my heart has finally calmed down.
Yeah.
This is going to speed it up again.
True. I don't need any other stimulants running through my body, because whatever this movie did to me, it made me release endorphins and things that just... Or probably like illegal substances, like that my
to
body
actually produces. Like induce chemically would be illegal. Mm-hmm. But Chris Nolan has found a way to incept that reaction through really, really, really loud noises.
Yeah,
of planes and decent bit of men screaming. I predicted there'd be a lot of men screaming, but I don't think that was a dominant noise. It was more like planes and bullets.
Planes and bullets. And what the men did...
And explosions, bombs.
Uh-huh. Bombs, a few torpedoes. But the men didn't so much scream as so much slowly and dramatically look up to the plane that's about to kill them like this.
Yeah. A lot of like whites of the eyes as they're just kind of looking up and horror.
I want to apologize to our podcast listener for that delay.
Oh, yeah. Now we're having to think about two different listeners.
Oh, my gosh. Like, after a Chris Nolan movie? Are you kidding me? Yeah. My brain can't do that.
One person listening to the podcast and one person watching Facebook Live. The question is it the same person?
Oh.
Don't know. You'd have to like message us or something.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we in limbo? Where's my totem?
So perhaps you've been wanting to see this movie. Perhaps you've seen a trailer for it, because the trailer looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys standing on a bridge and like a really intense score that's from Hans Zimmer, who's going on tour, by the way.
Yeah. The movie theater reminded us of that many
times.
There
are about three advertisements for it before the movie that Hans Zimmer is going on tours. Yeah.
And of course, being an advertisement, it worked and I want to go.
Yeah. I'll probably go see Hans.
Me too. But when I hear the music from Dunkirk, if he plays any of that, I will... like freeze up because it will remind me of a traumatic experience. Yeah.
The music, I have to say, was incredible.
It is very
good. Unbelievable.
I was really impressed. Actually, a lot of aesthetic things about this movie really, really
amazing looking. It uses like films, like 70mm, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I don't know what that means. I'm not going to act like I do, but apparently it looks really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first film shot in 70mm since Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
That's probably true.
I think it might be.
Nice. Very poetically filmed, beautiful, awesome lighting.
Good sound. Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, always.
Yeah.
He's
We're going to refrain from spoilers in this one.
Yeah,
It's not really a movie you can necessarily spoil.
No.
It's an experience. It's like a really intense amusement park ride.
Of course.
In fact, this movie reminded me of a plot-driven version of a different movie that we've mentioned a lot on this podcast.
Armageddon?
No. That was so funny because the movie that I'm thinking of is literally the opposite of Armageddon.
Which one?
Samsara.
Because you described it as like a prayer, not even a movie.
Exactly.
So slow and meditative.
I can't think of two more different movies than Armageddon and Samsara. They're literally the opposite.
So, like, you're saying, like, the visuals of this.
Yeah.
It was, like,
Visuals of this reminded me of Samsara, which was also filmed in 70mm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not a Chris Nolan movie.
No. Not a Chris Nolan movie by far.
It's like a lot of meditative long shots of existence, you know? Like,
yeah. If you're a devoted listener, you've seen it, because I think we've told you to.
Yeah, I've given that assignment.
Yeah. But this movie, because of its pace and because of its slow, methodic working nature, very much a being toward-ness. Anyway.
Yeah, is it being toward safety, being toward recovery, or being toward noise. Explosion? And noise, definitely noise.
Yes, for sure. So,
is it being in time, I see?
Of course. Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How about Martin that? Heidegger.
Martin Heidegger, watching over us.
Yeah, who, if we're to think about the historical accuracy of this film, it's worth mentioning that Martin Heidegger was on the bad guy's side.
Very Martin much so. Heidegger was the enemy.
The enemy.
Yeah, in that he was a Nazi.
And the film refers to the Germans or the Nazis as the enemy.
I don't think they ever say the word Nazi.
No, I don't even think they say German. They say Jerry once.
I think that one time they accused a guy of being a German spy.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's like the only time.
And you know what? That and other moments I almost missed, because Nolan movies in the theaters, just a general critique, usually lead to a loss of about 25% of the dialogue in my experience.
Yeah, I had that this time.
Like, I couldn't tell if it was like, are these like, they're like over a radio and they're British. Does the accent doing something? But it was, or is it Hans Zimmer's? That wasn't Hans Zimmer in that sound.
Yeah.
That was a Daft Punk noise.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Anyway. Yeah, that was a big complaint of The Dark Knight Rises, that a lot of people were like, I can't hear anything Bane says, which was apparently a big problem in IMAX. And that's kind of the case here. A lot of muffled noises, a lot of heavy British accents.
Yeah.
But there was like really huge explosions. Like the explosions made such a big sound in this movie that the speaker in the corner of the theater we saw it was like shaking. So I could hear this like physical object vibrating behind me. It was very loud.
Yes, it was. I was physically moved by this movie. I really think...
Which is Dunkirk, if you happen to just join us.
Yeah, Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
I almost said starring Chris Nolan. Dunkirk by Chris Noren. Chris Noren.
Yeah, this isn't like a war movie that you've seen, more than likely. Like,
no.
There's something different about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it partly has to do with the score. So have you ever seen the movie There Will Be Blood? I thought of that a couple times.
Ah, similar.
It's like a huge epic score. Like these two guys are running this guy on a stretcher, and it's like, like this like real intense pounding rhythms, almost like making your pulse go really fast and intense, which kind of made us reach that state where we thought we were having heart attacks.
Yeah, because no other movie has made me more certain that I'm about to die than this movie. And in that respect, this is a very... For me, it was being toward death big time, like Heideggerian. I was so certain that I was a mortal being on this earth watching this movie, because I was constantly afraid I was about to die.
Yeah, big sense of impending doom.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the movie. It's like, can we escape this impending doom in this hopeless situation? You'll have to see the movie if you want to find out.
Yeah, you will. But
I think the phone's about to die, so we're going to have to cease the live.
Yeah, so Facebook people, thanks a lot. Listen to episode number 50, General Snobbery.
And you'll hear all of this and more.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you. But you, listener.
You're here for the long haul.
Yeah,
now
sorry.
We can get serious.
Chicken serious now.
You don't have to think about people watching us, except the NSA.
Of course, yeah, they're watching and listening. And they're right outside my door, actually. I don't know if you saw them on our way in.
Oh, yeah, those guys in the black car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, it looks kind of nice.
Yeah. But now that we're off Facebook Live and we're a little more comfortable with our listener, we can start using our British accents. No, South African.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
That was a departure from our normal Ridley Scott.
Hey, we gotta get out of Dunkirk.
Departure as in Leonardo DiCaprio from Blood Diamond.
Yeah, the classic DiCaprio accent.
Yeah. And Hansu is in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What Ridley Scott? I could make this movie too, I swear.
Ridley Scott could not make this movie. James Cameron could not make this movie. Michael Bay could not make this movie.
Yeah.
I don't think any of those guys could make this movie.
This is a Christopher Nolan movie.
It is a Christopher Nolan movie for sure.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan's career has gone through the trajectory of, I don't know. There's no way to finish that sentence. It's gone yeah. through his own trajectory.
Yeah.
And it started with these weird kind of neo-noir.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're character studies. It kind of looks at memory and fear and yeah. paranoia and stuff.
Yeah.
The next thing we know, he's making the loudest explosions that I think yeah. have ever been made in the mm-hmm. history of cinema.
Yeah. I've never, ever, even with TVs all the way up, I've never heard anything that loud in my life.
Yeah.
I actually...
Like the ground was shaking.
Yes.
Yeah, like I'm not exaggerating.
No. It was... So remarkably loud.
So much of this movie depended on the sound. Like,
because
characters would react to sounds that, like, we as the audience would kind of hear coming in the distance, and they'd turn with, like, dread on their face, like, my God, there's a plane coming.
I wonder if this will win any, like, sound editing awards, because I don't really know. Yeah, but it seems like it's got to, right? Like, what other movie? This had so much sound.
So was it a good movie?
I am very interested in this question because as we were just talking about this like uniqueness of Nolan, I just ebb and flow so much in my views of him that I don't know why. No, there's no other filmmaker who like whose views or whose like artistic merits I like so much ebb and flow in terms of being like, that's amazing or that's dumb. You know, like the first half I'd say was it was much more of that drawn out, methodical, slow filming. More plot based stuff happened in the second half. I'd say there was at least two or three times more dialogue in the second half of the movie than in the first. And that's not to say a lot because there's no way this did not have much dialogue at all.
No.
But it really like that first half I just thought was so amazing.
Yeah.
I really was.
Like what in particular would you say?
The way that the scenes were tied together, like one second we're on a boat, the next second we're in the air, and it felt like a really, really natural bridge.
Uh-huh.
And it was like just long, long, very, very patient momentum.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it reminded me of the origin of man from 2001, A Space Odyssey. Which
is the Dawn of Man.
The Dawn of Man, yes. Damn it. One of my favorite things in all of cinema, and... Yet it's a scene in 2001 A Space Odyssey, and yet it's like 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's rare for scenes to be so long. And I felt like his were very long. And it just like, but it was all momentum building, and it was really captivating, I think.
Yeah. It was captivating. That was a good word for it. Like, I was very present with this movie throughout it. Christopher Nolan seems to love situations that are really, really tense.
Yeah.
Because if I were to describe what this movie is, I would say the most super intense moments that have ever been in like a single movie. Because, yes. I mean, every single scene was a new super intense moment at a certain point. Like, there was no real reprieve from it. Or there'd be like these little moments of reprieve. And that's why I said Armageddon earlier. Because like what Armageddon was to me, but like
you're
really
right.
poorly done. You know? And it's like, oh, now this thing's going to explode. Like, oh my God, we have to land.
Yeah.
This is like definitely a lot of creativity and thought went into a lot of the, I'd say most of the situations.
For sure.
And especially the way different characters were brought together. Although I say characters loosely.
I agree. And I figured we'd eventually get there.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of the reprieve, you're right. There were human moments. You know, some movies suffer from a lack of human moments. This had human moments, but they weren't necessarily relieving. Often a human moment is like, ooh, I feel some sense of humanity. These were like, oh, these humans might die. Like, so the human moments themselves were even tense. But the characters.
The characters. I don't know if I want to even try to like make this a complaint about the movie because I think Nolan would be like, well, it's not about the characters or it's, you know, it's not a movie about like drawing well-rounded characters. It's a movie about like whether or not they can get off. Or get out of Dunkirk.
Yeah.
And I think he would say that because he did say that. I actually read that on Wikipedia. Something like that.
Okay. Kind of covering his own bases.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there were more people than just General Snobbery who were critiquing his horrible, horrible characters.
Yeah. Well, he could still win an Oscar for this reason. I think I'm opening up a can of worms here. And maybe I shouldn't, but I'll just float it out there. I personally don't think The Revenant had very good characters.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's my own critique. I think that's the case.
Or else they were a little one-dimensional.
Or that, or actually, you know what? Never mind. It's not the characters. There were other aspects of the Revenant that I found a little lacking. That had particularly to do with Ignacio or Iñárritu.
Oh, Iñárritu. Yeah.
Yeah. What's his last first name?
Alejandro.
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 Anyway, sorry. His style. Why am I referring to that? Oh, but yeah, that's a good point. Good question. Are other people?
I have no idea what the question or the point was.
Wow, you're right. I don't know where I just went.
You went to arguing that the Revenant wasn't that good. I know that your departure point was that that this has a chance at an Oscar or something like that. Just trying to talk about the Revenant's characters and... Not sure after that.
Oh my god. What I was trying to get at is, anyway, forget it, but Chris Nolan, it is interesting to wonder, are other people saying that his characters are somewhat flat?
Yes.
Because if he's out there already claiming it's not about the characters.
Yeah. Like, you'd have to think he's responding to people leveraging these complaints. Yeah.
It's got to be about the characters, because if we don't sympathize with them, we don't sympathize with anything in the movie.
That's the problem. It's like, that's why you can't necessarily just say that. I mean, you can, because you're Chris Nolan, but what that means is this movie is not going to have any emotional attachment.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not exactly sure why you just, like, give that up. Like, I do understand that takes more, like, time and energy of the film to, like, you'd have to dedicate it, you know, to rounding out these characters. And I think he actually did a pretty decent job with those three characters on the boat.
I agree.
The family or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dunkirk.
I thought that was a pretty cool... interesting timeline that I wouldn't have expected from this movie, and it was pretty well balanced I thought, between like the different stories and the different focal points.
I agree. I thought it was well balanced and like well-paced.
And a little mind bending. I won't tell you just why, but Nolan threw a little Nolan in there.
Yeah, we looked at each other right when we saw it. Basically,
we said he did it.
Yeah, he did it.
Yeah, that predictive little bit we did at the beginning of this episode. I think that was one of the questions. Like, will he be able to bend our minds with Dunkirk?
He did it.
He did it. He also almost burst our eardrums with Dunkirk.
He did it.
Someone will, like, suffer an injury during this movie.
Of course.
At the very least, we were mentioning this as we left. I don't think anyone who's actually been in war should see this movie.
Yeah.
I really, because I remember when Saving Private Ryan came out, there were stories about D-Day veterans, you know, who at that point were in their 70s and 80s, who could not sit through the first part of Saving Private Ryan because it's D-Day. I think that's the case for this movie, too, but for people who've been in any war.
Yeah, especially in IMAX.
Yeah.
I feel like so many of these sounds would just instantly bring someone back to a horrifying memory.
Yes. Did we mention how... I forget what we didn't mention.
You mean what?
Oh, how we wouldn't recommend this movie to anyone? Have we already talked about that?
I don't think we did.
Yeah, we were talking about that outside, right?
Yeah. Like, you wouldn't recommend it to anyone?
Oh, no, I think I wouldn't recommend it to anyone that, what were we saying? Anyone who's
been to war?
Who's been to war, but also anyone who has any kind of health problem.
Yeah.
Did we already say that?
I think we were talking about that at the live portion.
That's right.
Anyone who has, like, heart issues or even, like, brain issues.
Yeah.
Like, it could do some damage.
Yeah, it's the only movie that we can think of that at the beginning, within the first 5 minutes, we both independently wondered if we could actually make it through the whole movie.
Yeah. I was really actually kind of afraid that my eardrum would burst, which I don't want to happen.
I don't think I would ever see this movie again on IMAX, actually.
Yeah.
I would watch it on a TV screen, but that's about the extent of it.
I mean, visually, it's stunning. I feel like we're kind of repeating a lot of the points here because we have just been basically assaulted by this film in the full IMAX version.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first thought I had of this movie was like, wow, that's really beautiful. Like, instantly.
Me too.
First establishing shot. It's like, whoa. Like, really, really amazing the way it looks and some of the shots of the planes over the sea.
For sure.
Like, it's definitely got a trapped feeling, you know, because like it's an island, right?
I think they were on the coast of France.
The coast of France.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So,
but they're surrounded.
Right.
You do feel trapped.
Yeah, a hopeless kind of situation. Uh-huh. But I always wonder, after Nolan makes these movies, like, why? Like, why?
Why this movie?
Why did you make that?
Well, can you say more about that? Like, what in particular about his movies make you think, what was your purpose?
You know, Nolan has this, it's an aesthetic that's different than like your standard action movie aesthetic. You know, it's definitely a lot different than a Michael Bay or like a Roland Emmerich or something like that. Like,
yeah,
he's got his own vision and he has a lot of money. So he also has a lot of like the elements of a blockbuster, you know, like the explosions and very intense situations. But it always seems to like be telling its audience that it means something. Like, it means a lot more than like the standard action movie. Like, this isn't just an action movie. Like, this is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, a movie like this, like, what is it telling me? Like, is it supposed to be giving this like pro-military message? Because like, I'm amazed at what these people are able to do. You know, these Tom Hardys.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like,
he was awesome.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was.
Bane in the air.
Bane in the air. Even he had a mask.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before someone dubs
the Bane dub. The Bane dub will come soon.
It will.
Of course.
But, I mean, do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I totally. And I actually, at one point I laughed in the theater because I had a little idea. This movie, to me, one of the characters of this movie is Britishness. I think the concept of being British was a character in this movie.
Perhaps like in response to Brexit?
Yes. I felt like some themes of like the Brexit stuff, because it was the British relying on the British to literally take them away from Europe. That was like, that's literally what happened in this movie. Like, we're leaving France, and then like the Brexit recently happened. And so there was like this very stout Britishness. It was like, I felt like this movie embodied British values. Like
they even gave stranded Cillian Murphy tea on that boat.
Exactly, yeah. Everything about this movie was British. Like the outfits, this like, there's this sense of like Britain being an island and like a strong, like people who have this really unique pride in their country.
Yeah, and like an indomitable will to live.
Yeah. And like they, you know, and at this point in the war, like the next possible thing is that the Nazis are going to invade Britain. So like they're gearing up for like what could be like one of the hardest things in their history. And there's just this sense of like British hope and British will. And there's the scene, these like emotional scenes when you have some sense of hope. I have no doubt that if a British person were to see this, they would start crying because they're like so beautiful and really evoke this deep sense of pride in Britain.
Yeah. I mean, was America even mentioned?
I don't think so. I don't remember America.
That's
or
incredible.
America.
Like for a World War II movie.
Yeah,
like
you're right.
Hollywood World War II movie.
Yeah. Wow, good point.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
No.
You're so right, though.
It was British people caring for British people.
Yeah. And if it's convenient, the French.
Which was a little twist. There's a little French twist going on, which I'm wondering if that's Chris Nolan's own critique or take on the Brexit.
Can you elaborate, or would it be spoiler?
I don't think it'd be spoiler, but at one point, a character in the movie basically acknowledges that he's going to help the French.
We band of brothers.
Who are, you know, their whole country's about to be completely taken over by the Nazis. And I wonder if that's Chris Nolan's little tip of the hat to France, like, we may be gone, but we still care.
Yeah, or like, when you guys are ready to get rid of the enemy, you can exit too. You can join us.
You leave the European Union, France.
Yeah, we'll be buddies.
Brothers.
So this is subtle propaganda to convince France to leave the European Union. Oh my God. Wow.
Something about it captured the political feelings of the day, I feel.
It did. Like, it seemed to involve Trump too, even though I don't know why.
I don't either.
Like, wasn't mentioned. Like,
no,
it definitely felt like of the Trump era.
It did.
Down the hall and to the left.
I don't know if it's just like this impending doom that is like
down the hall,
hovering over every single moment of this film, like to where you feel like you can't take a breath and like you aren't safe
anywhere. Like, because the definite theme of this film, even if there are themes of hope, the theme is hopelessness, or at the very least failure, because it's a success in the end in that in history, the British, you know, they managed to, like, you know, not be slaughtered on this beach, but
help of the common man,
help of the common man,
brothers,
but still they were in retreat. They were retreating. They had failed their war in France. And so it's like, oh, doom is right on the beach now.
Yeah, it kind of blurs the line between, like, heroism mm-hmm. and will to live.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are these people heroes in, like, the mm-hmm. way they're, you know, taking these huge risks to get onto a boat and mm-hmm. stuff like that? Or is it just, like, sheer instinct like, to survive? I mean, like, the Tom Hardy character, like, there's no doubt, like, this guy is just, like, this total BA hero man.
Of course!
Like, he's a hero. Yeah, the other people, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. are they heroic or just doing whatever they possibly can to survive?
Cillian Murphy's a conflicted character for sure.
Would you like to see my mask?
Cillian Murphy's, interesting character. Cillian Murphy's great at playing an unhinged man.
Yeah, he is.
You kind of see his face and instantly think this man's unhinged. Like, even in 28 Days Later, you know, he's the protagonist, but, like, there's something, like, unhinged about him, something, like, zombie-ish. Uh-huh. It's like he's just kind of right at that line of human and zombie, but he's maintaining his
humanity. Or human and scarecrow.
Mask.
Or human and scarecrow. That's right.
Oh, Cillian Murphy, I like him a lot.
Yeah, something fantastic about that man.
I like all the actors in this movie. Well, not the younger actors. I like the older actors, the more established actors.
Yeah.
So Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy, Kenneth Branagh, and Mark
Rylance, he was really good.
Mm-hmm. The younger actors, Harry Styles is in this movie from One Direction. that was a bit of an interstellar moment for me. I was like, is that Harry Styles?
Yeah.
And then that's all I could think when I saw him.
Interesting move.
Yeah.
You didn't think the young actors were that great?
It's not that I didn't think they were great.
They didn't have characters to play.
No, they didn't.
It was just like, run over here, look afraid, and like, say these lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was just, you're just kind of seeing these faces and latching onto different faces.
Yeah.
So I think one of my predictions before the movie was that, like, these different characters were going to have, like, one defining trait, you know, like the brave guy. But I think I was wrong. I think they have zero defining traits.
Are you talking about everyone or the younger?
Not everyone, just like the younger characters. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say that's the case, excepting the family on the boat.
Uh-huh.
And
I agree.
Then most of the other ones had one defining trait.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, like Tom Hardy, like, mm-hmm. let's kill these bad guys.
Yeah.
And Kenneth Branagh, like, let's get out of here.
He did a lot of looking.
Yeah. A lot of great gazes from Branagh.
Yeah, Branagh.
Yeah, he was great in the Admiral suit.
Yeah. He's one of the best gazers in Hollywood, I think.
These my joints!
Yeah. Who else is a good gazer?
I was just about to ask that.
Yeah.
I don't know why my mind went to Viggo.
Viggo.
I can't think of him gazing, but he
He gazes a lot in Lord of the Rings.
He does.
Yeah, Bloom gazes a lot in Lord of the Rings, too.
Oh, yeah. Bloom is a big-time gazer.
Yeah. Actually, Bloom gazes a lot in POC, Pirates of the Caribbean, too. Yeah, yeah. So he's on the edge of the boat, kind of looking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, McConaughey gazes pretty well in Interstellar.
You're the best pilot we ever had.
Yeah.
Same with Foster in Contact.
Mm-hmm. Someone who directly gazes well is Christoph Waltz. He does a good direct gaze to a human.
Oh, gaze at human.
Yeah. He's probably the best at that.
In terms of, like, instilling absolute fear. Paranoia in the mind of he upon whom is gazed.
Yes, absolutely.
not a sentence.
You know, something I've really appreciated about the journey of snobbing is it's actually made me appreciate or learn why to appreciate some actors. Because not everyone could do that. Or not everyone could give the impression that they are unhinged, like Cillian Murphy.
Would you like to see my mask?
But right. Some people can.
Some people can. Yeah, that's so true. And sometimes it, like, depends on physicality, like what you look like. So it's like an actor has to become really aware of, like, what he or she looks like, and then, like, be that person. Like, Kenneth Branagh has this kind of authority to his presence.
Yeah.
Like, Cillian Murphy couldn't have played that role, and Kenneth Branagh couldn't have been the unhinged, shell-shocked man who's trying to get the hell out of there.
Yes. Like, think of any actor crying. Most of them are bad. Most crying scenes in movies are very bad. Now think of Mel Gibson crying.
I was going to say, yes. Mel Gibson.
Yeah. It's like, okay, that's
a man.
This guy is, he's crying.
The limit of his wits.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, check out Ransom if you'd like to see a good Mel Gibson cry.
Yeah. On our way to the movie theater, Sean and I had a divine blessing. And it was, we drove by a church called Our Lady of Ransom.
Uh-huh. And we also drove by Ebert Lane.
Yeah.
We're being washed over by our gurus.
Yeah. One of whom is still living. Mel.
The eternal form of Mel.
Oh. And you know, they're referenced to Gibson in this movie. One of the characters is wearing a dog tag named called Gibson.
Yeah, yeah. A little homage to Gibson and his war efforts. Yeah. Nice job, Nolan.
Yeah, very good. That was nice. That felt good.
Yeah, I feel like that was a good release. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I was in a good state of mind after this movie ended.
No, I wasn't. I was in a stimulated state of mind, and it was artistic and mostly positive, but I wasn't calm at all.
One thing I do want to like go into a little, maybe as a final little trail here, like in terms of structure, that's something I was thinking about, like the three-act structure. I don't think this movie even has that. Like a three-act structure is typically, you know, first act is like 30 pages and it's like the setup and gets the characters. And then like a plot point comes in and like, you know, brings the characters out into this new adventure and this new act, like something kind of expands. And then it all, you know, comes together in the third act. But like this one,
I don't think
there's like distinct moments when it's like, okay, now we're in the second act. It's just like. Chaos.
Yeah.
The whole movie.
You're right. There's no reprieve. Again, like between the acts, it's just one solid flow. I think it's a single day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess so. Or maybe a couple. But the point is, it's very short period of time. Yeah. Constantly moving. The struggle like of the movie is evident like moment one, and that's these guys are trapped. It's not like that plot can't really develop much more. Like,
right.
Now we're more trapped.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't think it does. Maybe that's why it reminded me of Samsara.
Right.
Because it's just a flow.
Right, right. And I'm not sure if I liked it, if it worked.
I could have used a break. Just show me something happening in England. Please show me some shopkeeper restocking his shelves or just let me take a breath.
Right.
I had a stroke. I had a heart attack.
Definitely seemed to indicate or show the like horrors of such situations.
Yeah, which of course when any movie can do that to me, I'm like, okay, well you succeeded something most movies totally fail to do.
Yeah.
So I've never been in war, but I feel like most movies don't really show you like give you any impression of what war could be like.
Uh-huh.
But this one did.
So I guess maybe that is his point in the end, because so many war movies just become these kind of emotional vehicles for like maybe a character study, but usually just like, you know, put heroic man with conflicted life back at home who has to like make amends for past mistakes or something.
Exactly.
He's pretty much like the protagonist of these movies. So I kind of respect that Nolan decided like not to use that trope of the war movie.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why I said earlier, this is not like a war movie you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, there's definitely people he's following and getting you to root for, but not in any standard way. Mm-hmm. It's just more like the questions hanging over, like, are we going to get out of this situation?
Yeah.
Are we screwed?
Yeah. Yeah. He does give you some people to root for.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Little Ruth pun to end this podcast.
Of course.
Nice.
Yeah, but you're so right. We've all seen the typical movie, the typical Vecchio and Oppum. Saving Private Ryan.
Vecchio'm Oppum?
Oh, Vecchio'm Oppum. That sounds like some mantra.
What is that?
Vecchio was one of the characters, Vin Diesel from Private Ryan.
Oh.
Mark Sinclair.
Chaos.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
Oppum was the little goofy guy who could speak German and French and German with a slight touch of Bavarian in there, sir.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that was Oppum.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is, Saving Private Ryan is very good and it's heralded, but it's typical characters where we see their struggle.
Typical Spielberg in a lot of ways, exactly. Despite like the amazing war scenes and Matt Damon.
Coop.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon just appears out of nowhere.
Yeah, finding Matt Damon.
Finding Damon.
But these, you're right, characters are different. And
yeah,
we, that's what, again, makes me feel like it's Britishness, because we're less focused on, oh, I want that individual guy to make it back to his wife or whatever. It's, I want the Britishness to survive.
Yeah, yeah. We want Britain to win.
Yeah.
We band of brothers.
So just heed our warnings, listener. If you have any health conditions right now, I mean, we're not doctors, so we can't say don't go, but we would highly recommend at least like consulting with your doctor.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I'd have to think that they'll learn about this movie.
Of course.
Yeah, I like, really
another,
think
yeah, another
you're going to be complaints
ER
for
patient.
Sure. Yeah.
Straight from Dunkirk.
Yes.
Dunkirk.
Definitely. So thank you for being along this three-part ride.
Of course.
Brothers.
Yeah.
Pre?
Four-part if you tuned into Facebook Live. Who knows how that experiment went. It seemed we had one listener there.
Wow. It confirms everything.
Yeah. Like a mirror.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
Chaos.
So thanks for coming along, for crossing the English Channel, and you know, spending some more time with us and Chris.
Us and Chris, yeah, the relationship continues.
Mm-hmm, it does.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to see my mask?
Of course!
Agent Cooper.
Dunkirk.
Down the hall and to the left.